What if I told you that you did not have to just muddle through, learn things the hard way, and chalk it up to you being too small or you're being scrappy, and that you could actually build a team of strategic advisors to actually support you along the way and help you navigate these challenges that all small business owners face? And I bet you didn't know that there is a world of non-paid board seats, people out there, experienced people who are specifically looking to start their board career. And so they are looking for businesses like yours and entrepreneurs like you to support so that they could help build this next chapter of their career. You're listening to World's Greatest Boss, the podcast that helps you navigate the leadership challenges that come from running a business. I'm Jackie Koch, and I've spent close to a decade building high-growth companies and leading HR within startups. And I've made it my mission to help all small business owners avoid the mistakes that I had to help fix. Today on the show, you're going to learn all about how you, yes, you, the small business owner, can create your team of strategic advisors, a team of advisors that will help guide you as you grow your business. I'm joined by Deborah Boggs. Deborah is the founder and CEO of DNS Executive Career Management. It's a firm that helps executives position themselves for promotions and to start their board careers. We have such a meaty episode and conversation, and you're going to learn how advisors can actually provide much needed support and help prevent common mistakes and pitfalls that you might not foresee because you haven't been there before. You'll learn the importance of defining the scope of work, how to set expectations, and how to structure different types of advisory roles in your business. We also talk about how to structure payment for strategic advisors, and that includes cash, and it also includes other things that might not be cash when you're a small business. And then we also talk about how to structure trial periods and really schedule those regular check-ins for the advisor relationship to make sure that it's the right fit for your business. So let's dive in. I love a good entrepreneurship story, and I feel like you and I do similar work. And so I would love to know how you got on your entrepreneurship journey as well. Share with listeners a little bit about how you started your own thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So I'll start with where it all began, and then we can talk a little bit about how it's evolved and what I do today. But really, if we were to rewind 10 or 12 years ago, I was in what I thought was my dream job. I thought it was the absolute thing I had been working towards. I was really excited to be in it. And then when I got there, I realized there was just something still missing. And I had always been a resume nerd, someone who really enjoyed helping people get ready for their job search, helping them put their best foot forward and go for stretch opportunities they might not have thought they could get otherwise. And so while I was in this quote unquote dream job, I started doing this on the side just to fulfill that creative energy and just something I just really enjoyed doing. And honestly, it snowballed and took over my life. Fast forward to today now, I run what is now an executive career management firm. And what that means is we work with VP to board level leaders to prepare for and navigate their high level searches. So we're not a search firm. We don't do placements, but we're like the home stagers to make a luxury property look expensive before it goes on the market. And it's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I'm so grateful for people like you because being in recruiting and HR for so long, I often get asked to help people with the search. And at this risk of sounding like a jerk, I don't have interest in doing that. And it's not that I don't want to help people find a job. I help people find a job all day long, right? But I'm not like the coach to help people do that or make a career transition. And so I'm so grateful that there's people out there like you who have a passion for wanting to help do that because it's a skill that can be taught for sure. And so grateful that there's people like you out there that I can also refer others to because there are always people looking for help with that stuff. There's always a bunch of people who are always looking for jobs.
And you're so right. We partner with a lot of executive recruiters and things like that because we don't do the search part. They don't want to do the resume and the job search coaching part. And we spend a lot of our time really educating candidates on what recruiters do and don't do because there's a lot of misconceptions out there that, oh, go work with a recruiter and they'll get you a job. And that is not your job. So we do a lot of education around that.
Recruiting is a beast. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it for sure. So one of the topics I wanted to talk to you about today, I think I might set this up with a little bit of a backstory. I work with some clients for fractional HR, and a lot of times they are still pretty small. They're growing their team. Maybe they're at like 20 employees. They've been in business for a handful of years, and they're like learning stuff the hard way. They think they can do it all their own and they learn from mistakes. I have a client who specifically, she's seen so much success, but she openly tells me, I waited way too long to bring on advisors to help me or mentors to kind of help. And I do think as an entrepreneur, that's something that often you don't realize is an option other than hiring a business coach. And she now has more of a team of advisors. And she's like, this is game changing for me and so helpful. And I know that's something that you help people do in their search is become advisors. I guess I would love to know your advice on why having a team of advisors as an entrepreneur or small business owner can be so helpful and what impact can it have on the business?
That's such a great question because I think as many of your listeners know that the entrepreneurial journey is lonely. And a lot of times we can be maybe at our desk hammering away alone, thinking we have to reinvent the wheel or we have to do it by ourselves or we don't have the money to bring on help, which is so true for so many people. But really, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have to do these things alone. If you think about how to find strategic advisors to help with your business, especially in choosing a direction, some of those bigger things in the beginning, they're not going to physically write your marketing plan, but they are going to help in the right direction. And we think about a formal board of directors and what that looks like in regular meetings and all of these things. And that's what we think of. But really, there's a step before that that any business can take advantage of, which is building your own personal group of advisors for your business. That can really take on anything you might need. So maybe there's a specific area you need help with, like in HR, or like having someone help you with a go-to-market strategy, or thinking about your operation side and the pieces you're going to need to pull all that together. And so it's not necessarily about having to build this giant team of experts, but pulling in people that can help guide you in the right direction can be done at very low cost or even free for a lot of businesses.
As you've worked with different folks, what size of business do you think it's helpful to bring on advisors? Do you have a recommendation or is it like it depends?
Yeah, I really think it depends. I think early stage is helpful to have that advisor relationship because you're alone. Because like right now with a business my size, there's about 12 people on my team now. And so I have people on my team that are experts in their spaces that I can just bounce ideas off of now. But I think back to when I was building this, when it was just me, that would have been really, really helpful. Or when I had more of a junior team where, you know, it's lonely and I don't know if I'm headed in the right direction. And so I think that early to building stage to the stage of, oh, shit, I'm the boss now might be a good place to start. But from a candidate side, I think as the business owner, we think, oh, no one's going to want to help me with my thing or they're going to want money for this or whatever, which we never want to take advantage of people, certainly. But in my work, working with executives who are trying to launch their board careers, a good entry into paid board seats is having advisory seats first. And so a lot of times they will be interested in advisory seat for any size business because it helps pad their resume, show that they're board ready, show that another founder or CEO is leaning on them for expertise outside of their day-to-day work. And so there's definitely a win in there to keep it from being something that a really early stage founder is worried about maybe bugging people about.
I've worked with a lot of VC-funded startups. And so a board member in that capacity is usually somebody who is in the investing company, right? It's not chosen necessarily. It's kind of chosen, but not.
Right. They're there to protect the investment. They have fiduciary responsibility. Yeah.
For listeners to the show, let's talk a little bit, like, what does a board do? What is their responsibility for a company? And there might be listeners to the show who've also never worked anywhere that has a board and they hear the term, especially, you know, stuff happens and scandals and stuff like that. And I feel like sometimes you're too embarrassed to be like, I don't actually know what a board of directors does. So let's just like answer that question for people in case they're listening and have that question. Can you share your quick explanation of what a board does?
It's been really interesting, especially with some higher profile scandals in the news lately about boards. I told my husband, I said, I feel like my work is finally like people are talking about it and it's not just me being a nerd about how it works. So that's been fun. So a couple different ways you can think about it. So for like nonprofits all have boards, right? And those boards are governing the investments and the money side and making sure that the CEO typically reports into the board or the executive director, and they're managing the strategy and direction and focus of the organization, right? So they're like the overseers of the organization. And then you skip to say a public company, they all have boards and they're really overseeing the strategy and financial health and well-being and sustainability of the business as well. And so so the C-level team of a public company will report into the board. They're sharing their quarterly reports, things like that. And that board is actually responsible for the financial health of the business. So they have a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that they're making decisions and guiding the company in a direction that will keep it sustainable and financially healthy. So those are the two types of boards everyone thinks about, is like the big company boards that if there's a scandal, those are the ones in the news. They have the power to fire the CEO, things like that. And then at a smaller level, without the financial risk as much to the individual, is on the nonprofit boards. And then in the middle, there's these advisory boards for smaller companies. Startups may have them. Like you said, VC and PE companies will have their own boards, but those are really more to protect the investment of the company. Those aren't necessarily part of the governing body. That's kind of separate. Same thing with a privately held company that has an advisory board. That's not a governing body. They're not making decisions for the strategy of the company. They're not making decisions financially. They may not even meet as a board. They may not have a regular reporting structure. It could be very informal. And so it's up to the founder to decide what that looks like. Are they going to meet once a month? Or are they just going to have advisors on call if they have a question? What does that time commitment look like from the board standpoint? And that's something that has to be decided between the company and the advisors.
Yeah. From what you just described, it's almost kind of like parliament or like Congress for some boards, for sure. The board often isn't helping with like business strategy and stuff like that, which in the sake of setting up advisors, they are helping you with, right?
Yeah. The advisory board can help with really anything you need help with. Do you need someone to help you think about what market to enter for your business? Do they need to help with maybe positioning and communications and things like that? It depends on what the founder needs as they're getting started. A governing board is really focusing on risk mitigation, compensation. They decide like what executive compensation looks like, any of those like really big things, but they're not getting into the weeds on tactical everyday things, where an advisory board may, and it depends on what you need.
So before we go into how you could structure potential relationship with an advisor, when you're working with executives who do want to start a board career, what would be the benefit? Why would somebody want to do that? And maybe somebody listening to the show is like, oh, I didn't even know that could be an option for me. I would love to hear what benefit and why people you've worked with have decided to do that.
There's a different answer for different people. There's several different reasons why someone may want to join a board. There's a couple things. Either they are off-ramping their executive careers, but they don't want to retire. They really want to continue to use the expertise they've built over their career, stay relevant in their industry, keep their contacts up. Retirement is getting pushed out so far for so many people. And I know, even just thinking about myself, the thought of retirement is scarier than the thought of working the rest of my life. So I think a lot of people are looking to just stay engaged. That's where a lot of our clients say, the money doesn't really matter, but I do want to stay connected and engaged and things like that. The other piece is sometimes people are coming off of their executive career. And to be honest with you, it's a huge ego shift to go from having an executive career to being on the golf course or whatever that looks like. There's nothing in between. And so sometimes it can be kind of an off-ramp into just having that sense of purpose, having that sense of, you know, people do still need you for things, you're being called on for things, right? And then the third reason is, you know, financially. Some people will start their board career, again, starting with advisory roles, and we can talk through this whole process, which was probably for a different day. But once you start getting on paid board seats, it can be a lucrative career in a part-time capacity. A lot of times people see that as their second act career, where they'll string together a few board seats, make almost a full-time income, but at a much lower capacity for their time.
Maybe that's what we should do.
Exactly.
How much experience do you have to have in order to do this?
So for paid board seats, the data shows you need at least 15 solid years. That's on the really low end. If someone needs to get really nerdy in the data, Spencer Stewart puts out a board index every year. Their 2023 board index just came out. And it slices and dices all of the relevant data for the S&P 500. So there's not a great data on private company boards, but there is on public. You kind of get an idea. I tell you all this to say, typical board members paid in seats are in their late 50s and 60s. But the pendulum is swinging. As the pendulum swings towards more diverse candidates, that really includes more diversity of thought, and that includes other generations. So people as young as their 40s are landing board seats, but they're going to have really deep experience in their industry or their function.
I also wonder how all of that will shift in the world of fractional work too, because I think fractional work is going to be where a lot of industries move to. So it'll be interesting to watch it for sure.
It's definitely going to change. In every function, I've seen, you know, people want to do fractional work with my executive clients in every function. It'll be interesting to see how that changes the relationship between employer and employee. We saw it with freelance 10 years ago, and now we're seeing it at the highest levels of leadership. And it's really interesting.
I know. It'll be really interesting to see how it all shakes out. So many things are going to change in the next 10 years with remote work. People don't want to be employees. I just think the way that we have work relationships are going to be so different, which could impact board seats.
I think you're absolutely right, though. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, it will. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about that strategic advisory role, because I've had people reach out to me, friends who do have quite a bit of experience in, say, like supply chain, and they are being asked to be an advisor to a small business that's launching a company. And they're like, how do I even structure this? Like, how? And I'm like, I've seen this happen. I've seen that happen. And now I wish I knew you back then, because I would have referred her to talk to you. But let's talk a little bit about how those can be structured and how you could think about getting creative with incentivizing somebody to invest their time and energy to help you if you're a small business owner.
From the small business owner standpoint, you need to think about what it is you need from your advisors and what you're going to be asking of them. Because I think having a clear picture of what that relationship needs to look like will help you understand how to incentivize it. I've thought about bringing on an advisor recently. This is just kind of thinking through my thought process on the topic. We recently launched into the B2B space, selling into corporations. We've never done that before. We've always worked with individuals, but now we offer executive outplacement for corporations going through mergers, downsizing, all of that. That's a new area for us. So I'm thinking, do I bring an advisor on who understands what that sales process looks like to kind of talk me through what that's going to look like? And if so, what is that time commitment? Is that a consultant or is that really more of an advisor where I have questions? So as a business owner, as a founder, I think you need to think about what are the areas you want help with and what does that time commitment look like? And then from the advisor side, same thing. You've got an opportunity to be an advisor. What do I ask for? What do I look at? And I would say the first thing you want to focus on is get really clear on the scope of work. Because I think sometimes a lot of business owners will say they want one thing and not realize they really want someone to do the thing. And that's not an advisor. And all of a sudden you get sucked into a huge project you're not really getting paid for. And that's not helpful. And I know a lot of people won't say no once they get sucked in, and then it becomes a huge time suck. So I would say get really clear about the scope of work and the expectations. And then you have an idea of what to ask for. And if it's not straight cash, because the company's not quite in that place yet or whatever it might be, which would really be more of a consulting arrangement anyway, then it can be equity. From the advisor side, I would say, you know, ask for whatever you think you're worth or what you think the company will deliver on. From the business owner side, I would say don't give up much equity. I think sometimes we think, oh, it's just a small percentage. But if it's like 7% or something, that can be a large chunk of your business. So think about 1-3% equity, depending on what that person's helping with. And then definitely from both sides, have it reviewed by an attorney and get a contract in place.
So what I found is a lot of times CEOs, entrepreneurs, they don't know what they don't know. They know they need help. The reason they're asking for an advisor is because they don't know a lot about the thing. So they may not know how to get clear on what they need help with because they don't even know what they don't know. So I want to flip this question on its head. If one of the folks you were advising was like, hey, I got presented with this opportunity. Like, what do you think about it? How should I structure it? And it came to you and it was like super vague and not really dialed in. Are there questions that you would coach them on to ask to get clear? How do you help them get clear on what they are? Because if they just go back and they're like, I need more clear scope of what I'm going to be working on. And the founder's like, well, what can you do for me? Like, how do you navigate through that when they both are muddled on what needs to get done?
I love this because when I hired my first real hire in our team was an operations manager, still with me today. But when she joined, she had been a past client and I knew that she had built her own business. She had built and exited businesses and things like that. And she was really looking for part-time work to stay busy. And I'm telling you this to say, when I reached out to her with this opportunity, I didn't know what I needed, but I knew I needed help and I knew I needed to get out of my own way to scale. And so I reached out to her in an email and I'll never forget because I said, I have this job, but I don't know what it does or how much time it's going to take or what it pays. Do you want to do this thing with me? And her response in all caps was, hell yeah. And I thought, okay, cool. We'll figure out the details. Awesome. I just needed that energy with me. And it's been an amazing ride.
What if your client was like, hey, I got this email. What do you think?
I've been like, absolutely not. Time out. Number one, I'm incredibly lucky that she was willing to go on that journey with me. And it's been great. But on the other side, I would say to go back to the CEO, the founder, small business owner and say, what are the challenges you're having right now? Or what are your goals for the next year? And find out like where their head is. Because sometimes they want help with things that you may not be the best person to help with. Maybe they don't know exactly what you need to do, because if they knew what you needed to do, they could just do it on their own. But maybe having a clear understanding of what the challenges are, or where their roadblocks are, or where they feel like they're getting stuck is helpful. If you can't figure that out, and that's fine too, then just get clear on the time commitment involved then. Put some parameters around that. You know, we can meet monthly for 90 minutes and I will be available by email, or I can meet monthly for 90 minutes formally and 2 calls a month or something. And just put some guardrails in it so that you don't get sucked into being their COO without the compensation for that.
That makes sense. I would imagine it would be like, hey, if you're not super sure, just commit to like, let's try this for 6 months.
That's a great point.
And revisit it. You may or may not know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask anyways. How do you know if you can even give equity away in your business? If you're like an LLC, can right. you give equity away? And how do you even go about figuring that out? If you're listening to the show and you're like, okay, how do I do that?
I am not the financial person to ask about that. And my operations manager would definitely tell you, like, please don't ask Deborah any financial questions. I would say that's really where you're going to want to have a good relationship with your CPA, your accountant or whatever, and look down the road and say, okay, what would this look like? What do I have the budget to do? What am I forecasting to do next year? That kind of thing. And then go from there. But I would definitely ask whoever helps with your finances. If you're still doing it alone in QuickBooks, you're probably not ready to give equity away.
Probably a good rule of thumb for sure. I'm sure this is dependent on the business, but are there any places or parts of the business that you see are really optimized for advisors? Maybe that's like who you're working with. You're like, oh, I know there's a lot of people in marketing that want to do advisory roles or anything like that. Or is it kind of across the board?
Yeah. So it's interesting. The places that I see most often from the advisor side that are looking for these opportunities are definitely like chief marketing officers or marketing leaders definitely have a ton of expertise and they're looking for opportunities to kind of advise and then move into board seats. CHROs and HR leaders, certainly. And part of that is because it can be a little harder to get a seat on a paid board as a CHRO unless you can show all the ways you support the business additionally. And so advisory seats are helpful for them too. So that's kind of a win-win. And then COOs, a lot of operations, you know, I think it's incredibly helpful. I know on a previous episode you just recently did, somebody had mentioned about how operations needs to be your first hire. I totally agree with that. And if you can't do that yet, then maybe operations advisory might be a really good next step if you're kind of in that inflection point in your business. So those are the three that I see a lot of. You know, people can help with sales, some other things, a little bit of accounting, but those are the three that I see more often.
If you're seeking an advisor, do you post it? How do you go about finding someone? What if you don't have anyone in your network that could be good? Do they go to your guys' website or like how do they find somebody?
Two things. If you don't have anyone in your network already that you would say, like, again, she was an advisor, but when I needed that first operations hire, I knew someone and I thought, okay, who in my network makes sense? And I reached out to her first and she said yes. But if you don't, I'm going to give a plug for an organization I'm not affiliated with, but I love the work that they do. I do some training with them around board readiness and all of that. But a company called The Fourth Effect has a really great advisory and board platform to match potential advisor candidates and founders and small business owners so they can find each other. They say what they're looking for, where their interests are, where their expertise is, and the businesses do the same thing. And there's a little bit of matching in there. So again, that company is called The Fourth Effect, all spelled out. And so that's a really great option.
Thank you. I just jotted that down and I'm definitely going to make sure it's in the show notes and I'll go take a look at that too. It does take some just networking and putting it out there. Just like when you're hiring anybody, you got to be willing to ask for what you need, ask for referrals. I think people forget, just like in regular hiring or finding advisors, people want to help one another. You just got to ask and like, yes. Who do you know? And you'll usually find somebody, I imagine. Deborah, it was so great having you on the show to talk about this topic. I feel like it's still such a learning curve for me personally a little bit, as well as a lot of small businesses out there. So I'm really excited that we could talk about how to build an advisory board and best practices for doing so. If listeners wanted to connect with you more, maybe they want to get some coaching and stuff, where's the best place for them to find you and connect with you?
Best place to find me for, you know, regular content and information on these things is LinkedIn. I'm very active on that platform with posts and advice. And so my LinkedIn is Deborah Boggs, DeborahBoggs, or our website. You can learn more about me and my team at dscareermanagement.com.
There you have it. Deborah unlocked some amazing insights and ways that you can start to incorporate strategic advisors into the fabric of your business. She shared how these advisors can play a big support role for business owners just like you, and how they can help clarify your business goals, how they can help align your strategies, and give you access to a bigger network and key relationships you might need to scale your business. They can often help you build credibility and trust with clients and even your team, and they can also be a great sounding board and mentor for you in your leadership and business journey. So as we wrap up today's episode, I want to leave you with a final thought. If today's discussion resonated with you at all and you found yourself nodding along to some of the strategies and insights that we talked about, there's a good chance somebody in your circle, especially your entrepreneur circle, could benefit from it too. So I encourage you, if you know another small business owner who could use this knowledge to help build their strategy and decision-making, share this episode with them. It's a simple act that could significantly empower them in ways that maybe you didn't know. So let's together make building a business easier for one another. It's already hard enough. Why don't we help one another make it a little bit easier? So thanks for tuning in. And until next time, go out and be a great boss.